أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. We seek the protection of God from Shaitan, who has been expelled from God's kingdom of special mercy for two reasons. Number one, the Shaitan's arrogance. Shaitan knew what was haq and right, yet he refused to submit and accept. And secondly, was Shaitan's defiance. He knew what was evil and wrong, yet he deliberately committed the evil, and therefore he disqualified himself from continuing to receive God's special grace. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. We turn humbly to God and we ask for His help for three reasons. Number one, we believe He is Allah, the absolute perfect being, the source of all perfection. And therefore, anyone who hopes to achieve any goodness or virtue necessarily must turn to Him and Him alone, though that perfection or goodness may reach him after passing through a variety of mediums. And secondly, we turn to Him because we believe He is Rahman. He's overflowing with love and mercy and grace, such that every moment, continuously, every particle, every entity in the universe is a manifestation and an expression of His love, of His attention, of His grace, of His mercy, whereby that entity comes to life, whereby that entity grows and develops towards its perfection. And therefore we turn to Him for help. And thirdly, we turn to Him because we believe He is Rahim. Not only is His universal mercy all-pervasive, but His mercy is unlimited. It's eternal. It's unending. It's abundant. There's a special grace and mercy available specifically to those who accept this absolute reality and the truth, who submit to it, who mold their lives according to its dictates, who harmonize themselves with the whole of the universe, which is in obedience to God. وَالصَّلَاةُ وَالسَّلَامُ عَلَى سَيِّدِنَا وَنَبِيِّنَا مُحَمَّدٍ وَآلِهِ الطَّاهِرِينَ. We send our salutations and greetings on the Holy Prophet of Islam, that most praised man, because he's the most perfect man, for two reasons. His perfection was based on the fact that his understanding of the truth of the universe, the absolute reality of the universe, who God is, what God's attributes are, His infinite beautiful names, infinite love, perfect knowledge, perfect mercy, perfect power, majesty, greatness, grandeur, generosity, all the beautiful names. And his understanding of how this absolute reality is manifesting itself in the universe, moment by moment, with total control over everything, is driving the universe with wisdom, with love, with majesty towards this purpose of creation, which is perfection. The Prophet's realization of these realities was the maximum possible for any human being. And secondly, the Prophet translated this realization into action, such that in his thinking, in his feelings, in his actions, in his personal life, in his public life, economic, political, social, cultural, military, all dimensions, the Holy Prophet was the most submissive and humble to this absolute reality of the universe, and therefore the most perfect, and therefore the most praised one. Let me send our salutations on his holy progeny, who were the next best in perfection after him, and especially so the third holy Imam, whose movement and uprising has become a role model for all movements to establish godly values and justice on the earth. Respected elders, brothers and sisters in Islam, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. We were discussing the importance of participation and engaging in the ritual of mourning and weeping for the tragedy of Karbala. And we said, if this mourning is to have an effect, a transforming effect, we need to be aware that weeping at its basic level is just emotional and reactive, whereby anyone who is human will express sympathy with the intensity of the tragedy and the suffering that happened in Karbala. The second stage of weeping is that we begin to gain understanding of the true personality and the other companions who were involved in Karbala. More our understanding, more our love for that perfection for which they stood for. And therefore, more intense will be our reaction and weeping for them. That's the empathic level of weeping. And thirdly, we said, the experiential level of weeping is whereby the intensity of love for the perfect virtues which were embodied in these personalities becomes so great that I begin to intensely feel the disgust at the evil that happened there. I begin to aspire and intensely desire that if I were also part of this movement in order to fight against evil and to stand up for the truth, how can I tell you what my feelings are? And this riwayah tells us, if I were to express my feelings, I would say, لَبَّيْكَ دَاعِيَ اللَّهِ إِن كَانَ لَمْ يُجِبْكَ بَدَنِي فَقَدْ أَجَابَكَ شَعْرِي وَبَشَرِي وَقَلْبِي وَهَوَايِ وَرَأِيِ. The totality of my being, my flesh and blood, my skin and hair, they are crying out, yes, oh, I wish I were with you. And then the fourth level of weeping, whereby we take into account the existential aspect, that the purpose of existence is being served by weeping, whereby finally the establishment of godly values on the earth requires that final struggle between truth and falsehood. And weeping prepares me for that. I was not there in history, yes, but I'm now here today. If tomorrow that struggle were to occur, I'm ever ready. نصرتي لكم معدة. I'm ever ready. فمعكم معكم لا مع عدوكم. In order for us to be able to engage weeping from this particular dimension, we therefore need to be very clear in our minds. We need to remind ourselves, why is it that the event of Karbala happened in the way that it did? Next slide, please. One important question. Why is it that Imam Hussein alayhi salam did not start his movement and base his whole uprising in Medina? One. Why did he not go to Kufa? Two. Why, for example, did he not go to Yemen? Three. Of the whole Islamic empire, he chose Kufa as the place to go to. Medina did not have enough supporters for the Imam. His movement would have been quashed, defeated. Mecca, Imam Ali Salam himself said, he told Abdullah bin Zubayr, who was also planning to make an uprising against Yazid in an opposition, he says, I heard from my father that inna biha kabshan yuzbah, that there is a ram who will be slaughtered in this holy sanctuary. I don't want to be that ram. And he left Mecca. Abdullah bin Zubayr later on was slaughtered. He did not go to Yemen. Yemen was the base where his father Imam Ali alayhi salam was sent by the Prophet for Tabligh along with Ma'az bin Jabal. Yemen had a good base of support, but not big enough, as strong enough, as extensive and intensive enough as Kufa. Sham was out of the question. Basra was out of question. These were total strongholds of the Bani Umayyah. The one place in the Islamic world where Imam alayhi salam could hope for a strong show of support was Kufa. Imam Ali ruled there for 4+ years. People saw the justice of Imam Ali alayhi salam. They loved him. And therefore we find that when Imam alayhi salam was in Mecca, the largest and the only place perhaps that showed support was Kufa. By the time Imam arrives in Sha'ban, Rajab, he leaves Medina. By the time of Ramadan, we're told already almost 12,000 letters were received. At one stage, on a daily basis, there were hundreds of letters coming from Kufa. Muawiyah is gone. We have got no leader. We are ready to support you. Come over. And the people who wrote those letters, they could be divided into three types. There were leaders who were good leaders, supporters. People like Habib bin Mazahir, people like Muslim bin Awsajah, people like Sulaiman bin Surad Khuza'i and others. And then there was a second type of letter writers, but who were evil leaders. Initially they showed support, but then they switched. People like Shabath bin Rada'i, people like Hajjar bin Abjur, people like Amr bin Hajjaj Zubaydi, people like Uzra bin Qais. All of these later on became leaders and commanders of small contingents of armies of hundreds or thousands who came then to Kufa against Imam Hussein alayhi salam. But initially they wrote letters. Imam, for example, tells Hajjar on the day of Ashura, "Did you not write that letter to me saying that the garden is blossoming, the fruits are falling, everything is ready, come over, the army is ready?" Hajjar said, "No, I never wrote that letter." And Imam says, "God cursed the liar." Kufa had a large number of people, thousands, who wrote letters also, "Come over." Yet, come the time when Imam sends Muslim bin Aqil, and initially we are told almost 18,000 people came out in support of Muslim bin Aqil, yet overnight something goes wrong and Muslim is abandoned. Question: why? If I am to learn a lesson from Karbala, and if Karbala is not only history, but it's a role model for all subsequent struggles to establish truth and justice and to oppose evil, and therefore Karbala has got a lesson for me today, I need to find out. And if I cry and I say, "Oh ya laytani kuntu ma'akum," I wish I were there at that time. Question: where would I have been at that time? Would I have switched or not? Next slide, please. Question: what influenced these people to change their minds? The evil empire uses certain tools to control. One, money. Many of these leaders were bought over, silence. Two, military might. You can't be bought, then we will terrorize you. We will show that we are the military superpower. Don't you dare rise up against us. Many of them were subjugated. They were terrorized. Ibn Ziyad walks into Kufa, and what does he do? He kills so many people and shows, this is the example. And you tribal leaders, don't you dare make an opposition, otherwise you'll have the same result. And then the majority of the masses, propaganda, negative propaganda, which deceives and which dupes. And people change their minds. Can these influence us today? Oh, absolutely. Well, this is how the evil empire works all the time. Next slide, please. I would like to remind ourselves that how easy it is for us to fall into this trap. 50 years, the Prophet dies in the 10th year of Hijrah. 50 years, half a century. 60th year of Hijrah, Karbala takes place. In half a century, a community is ready. A community which saw the Prophet take up the young Imam Hussein who was sitting in the majlis, and who begins to cry. The Prophet is busy in between a sermon. The Prophet stops the sermon comes down, picks up the child, takes him into his arms, kisses and displays affection, love for that child. You don't have to be an intellectual to say, oh, the Prophet said, Husaynun minni wa ana min Husayn. You don't have to be an intellectual to say that, oh, the Prophet said, Al-Hasan wal-Husayn, Sayyida shababi ahli al-Jannah. Even if you don't have a mind, but you did see what the Prophet did. That is the minimum itmam of hujjah for the ummah of who Husayn is. Yet that same community could turn. 50 years. How? Let me just give you an example. You've all heard about what is known as the sexual revolution, meaning that sexual behavior should be confined only to the married life, not in public. But the revolution now says everybody is free to express themselves sexually in any which way they want. This society in America, back in 1953, just 50 years ago, compared to 2003, look at the change that occurred. Sexual morality, and how the media can play on people's minds. For those who are of the older generation, perhaps they would know, there was this famous television program by the name of I Love Lucy. It's a situation comedy program. Very high national rating when it first began half a century ago. At that time, this actress, Lucy, becomes pregnant. She's married, of course, and through marriage she becomes pregnant. The interesting thing is, in the program, nobody is allowed to even use the word pregnant. Because it can conjure up images of some sort of sexual relation. The CBS executive producers of the program were so self-censoring. Come 50 years later, 2003, I won't take the name of the television program. In that program, there's one word. That word was pregnant. I'm not going to use this word. It's a four-letter word. It describes a particular part of the female body. Now, that word is being used in this program repetitively and shamelessly, and that also, which is considered to be by many one of the most offensive words in the English language. Revolution. 50 years. Morality changes media. Next slide, please. Excuse me for this picture. This is the West. Just 7-8 decades ago. Notice they're carrying rackets. These are tennis players. You know who are tennis players today and how they dress themselves? You see how morality can change, customs can change. Next slide, please. How? I would like to offer an analysis, just a reminder. Perhaps all of us already know this, but we need to be reminded. Karbala should serve the purpose of reminding us of these realities. The Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi he says that sitting in between his companions, he said, كَيْفَ بِكُمْ إِذَا فَسَدَتْ نِسَاءُكُمْ وَفَسَقَ شَبَابُكُمْ. Woe be to you when there will come a time amongst you in the community when your morality will decline, your women will openly break the divine laws, there will be no public chastity, when your youth will become rebellious and openly break the divine laws. أَيَكُومُ ذَلِكَ يَا رَسُولَ اللَّهِ. And the companions are surprised and shocked. Will this state of moral decline happen? And the Prophet said, نَعَمْ وَشَرٌ مِّن ذَلِكَ. And even worse than that. Why? إِذَا لَمْ تَأْمُرُ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَلَمْ تَنْهَوْ عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ. When you see the ma'roof not being acted upon, you keep silent. When you see the evil being performed, you keep silent. Stage 1 of moral decline. Doesn't matter, let it happen. Stage 2 of moral decline.
إذا أمرتم بالمنكر ونهيتم عن المعروف.
When you begin not only to be silent against evil, but you begin to encourage evil. You begin to support evil. You say, in my family, this is how we are. This is how you should be. This is how you should dress, even if it is evil. No. وَشَرٌّ مِّن ذَلِكَ. Not only are you silent against evil, not only do you support evil, oh, you become shameless.
كَيْفَ إِذَا رَأَيْتُمْ الْمَعْرُوفَ مُنْكَرًا وَالْمُنْكَرَ مَعْرُوفًا.
Not only do you support silently, not only do you encourage it, but you don't no longer consider vice as vice. Vice becomes good. You see the stage of moral decline that can creep into a society? Next slide, please. If I were to rephrase it in a formula, I would call it the DNG effect of the media. The media, first of all, will desensitize you to the evil. Oh, it's okay. Doesn't matter. No problem. And stage two, it's normal. Everybody is doing it. No. Stage three, it glamorizes. Not only is not bad, not only is it okay, it is good. The evil, it's good. That's the effect of the media. Next slide, please. Very quickly. Roger Streitmatter has written this book back in just 1 year ago, 2004, and he's titled the book Sex Sells. And he's listed the stages through which the American society back in the 50 years has undergone, whereby a society which was respectful towards sexual morality has now become shameless. And the most important effect has been that of the media. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. For example, he talks about the pill. In 1990, the Ladies' Home Journal celebrated 30 years of the introduction of the contraceptive pill into the American society. And they celebrated saying that there's nothing in the history of women which played a more influential role in giving them freedom than the pill. Because the pill meant she's no longer confined to the home. The pill meant she can now take up jobs and long-time careers. The pill meant, she could be sexually free and not be bothered about pregnancy. But this was a small change. A pill is introduced. It is the media that promotes it and makes it pervasive. Time Magazine, Newsweek, Fortune, Good Housekeeping, Esquire, Reader's Digest, Ebony, all of them celebrate and promote the pill. We're talking about half a century ago. Next slide, please. The other example he gives is a magazine which introduces nudity into society. I would not have mentioned this example had I not seen some of these magazines here in the airport. I find them covered, but they're being sold. 1953 it was introduced. By the 60s, within a decade, this magazine had a large circulation, 6 million. There was a population who had the appetite for such. It became then the Bible of the young, urban, educated male. And what was the message of the magazine? Oh, it's perfect, perfect normal. It's not bad. It's okay. Oh, it's good to look at a naked person. One. Oh, no. It's very normal to have sex outside marriage. Oh, it's very normal to have sex before marriage. Oh, it's very normal to have multiple partners. As one of the social critics has mentioned, after the introduction of this magazine, society changed forever. People's morality went down. The publisher, in the end of the 60s, he was a billionaire with a chain of luxury hotels and clubs and publishing houses. Next slide, please. In the 60s, and you have sex being introduced in the movies, and the famous example is that of James Bond. James Bond became the perfect role model. Up until the 50s, movies talked about Ben-Hur, movies talked about the Ten Commandments, the biblical stories. Or movies talked about simple romantic comedy. This one came and changed everything. James Bond was supposed to be the hero, the pleasure-seeking, hedonistic, sexually active, debonair, the one who progresses from one girl to another girl to a third one, just with the same indifference, casual indifference that he had with the first one. This is how you should aim, this is the lifestyle that you should be aiming for. And what was the producer's motive? Oh, every man wants to be a Superman. And every man would want to make love to anything that walks. Look at the idea being promoted. And the James Bond movie, it tells the ordinary guy in the audience, you could live that dream, just like James Bond. The result, there is no movie series in the history, blockbuster, which grossed $2.5 billion over a decade. We're talking about the 60s, huh? Nothing has matched it. We're talking about at one time, they're claiming there is not a single James Bond movie which has not been watched by at least 1 billion viewers in the world. Look at the mass effect a movie was beginning to exert. The result being The Swinging Bachelor of the end of the 60s. And the story continues. I'm not going to continue further on what's happened in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. It's even worse. Because I think our society is still at this level. Next slide, please. Oh, but I watch TV and I watch movies and I read magazines and maybe listen to music. But I'm a careful person. I'm a conscientious person. I don't get affected. Researchers have shown worldwide, when magazines were introduced into society, which openly showed sexual pictures, the cases of rape went up. Oh, I'm not affected. Oh, yes, but then how come society is affected? When people are exposed, there is an effect. John Court is a researcher. In his report on sex and violence, the ripple effect, he has studied 50 states across the United States. And he compared the availability in circulation of sexual magazines compared to the cases of rape reported. And he found that a state where the circulation of the magazine was higher, the number of cases of rape reported was highest. And he comes across this case of Hawaii, for example. Between this period of 1960 to 1974, when the magazines were introduced in that society, the number of rape cases shot up almost 10 times. And then temporarily, when the magazines were banned, the cases of rape went down. And then when the magazines were reintroduced, the cases of rape went up. Oh, I'm not affected by the media. The LAPD, Los Angeles Police Department, cases of abuse. They say almost 2/3 of the homes when we go and visit them, we find that there is free availability of these obnoxious, obscene magazines there. Rapists who have been convicted in courts on interview, they admit, yes, they have been exposed. And they are regular, big-time consumers of these forms of media. Conclusion. The effect of money, the effect of military might, the effect of the media are tools that have always been used by the evil empire to impose evil on society. One. Two. This has happened in the past, it is happening now today. Three. These are the same factors that can block us from reaching the truth, or if we reach the truth, to accept the truth, or if we accept the truth, to act on the truth. Four, today we need to be extra careful because the effects are even greater. The chances for us to fall into this trap are therefore even greater. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. Can we just skip this? Skip this, please. So, what is our duty? In Surah Ali Imran, chapter 3, ayah number 110, Allah says, كُنْتُمْ خَيْرَ أُمَّةٍ أُخْرِجَتْ لِلنَّاسِ تَأْمُرُونَ بِالْمَعْرُوفِ وَتَنْهَوْنَ عَنِ الْمُنْكَرِ وَتُؤْمِنُونَ بِاللَّهِ. You have to be ever on your guard. Whatever is ma'roof, you should seek it. And you should practice it. And you should promote it. Whatever is munkar and evil, you should recognize it. You should detest it in your heart. And you should also desist others and prevent others from practicing it. This principle of Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar, one of the fundamental motives for the event of Karbala. That has to be practiced by us. Otherwise, we will become like that riwaya which tells us that whosoever abandons Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahi anil Munkar, man taraka inkar al Munkari bi qalbihi wa lisanihi wa yadihi, whosoever sees evil but feels no disgust towards it, who sees evil and speaks not against it, who sees evil and does nothing to stop it, فَهُوَ مَيِّتْ بَيْنَ الْأَحْيَاتِ, he's dead. He's a walking dead man. Karbala not only should make us cry, it should make us remember that if we are to be spiritually alive, we need to be very careful about what is munkar and what is ma'aruf, and how to go towards munkar and practice it and promote it, and how to avoid evil and to prevent it in society. Next slide, please. We commemorate today the memory of Aun and Muhammad bin Abdullah bin Ja'far. Abdullah bin Ja'far did not attend Karbala. Perhaps it seems he was handicapped. But when he hears that Imam Hussein alayhi salam is proceeding towards Kufa, he immediately writes him a letter from Medina to Mecca and requests him, do not go to Mecca, do not leave Mecca and proceed to Kufa, because there is a danger that you shall be killed. Next slide, please. But Imam Hussein alayhi salam and Abdullah bin Ja'far says that I will arrange for a diplomatic immunity for you from the Bani Umayyah and from Yazid. And a letter comes from the governor of Mecca, Amr bin Sa'ad bin As al-Ashtaq. Why are you breaking the unity of the Muslim community by making an opposition to Yazid? Imam Hussein alayhi salam responds to that letter. This is, the letter is not from Abdullah bin Ja'far. It is from the governor of Mecca. And Imam says, لَمْ يُشَاقِقِ اللَّهَ وَالرَّسُولَ مَنْ دَعَى إِلَى اللَّهِ وَعَمِلَ صَالِحًا وَقَالَ إِنَّنِي مِنَ الْمُسْلِمِينَ. I'm not breaking the unity of the Muslim community. The Muslim community seems to have been deviated. I am the one calling to God. I am the one calling to the Prophet's path. I am the one who is living a life of virtue. I am the one who is declaring my submission to the will of God. Next slide, please. And Amr bin Sa'ad, the governor of Mecca, says, I offer you immunity if you stop your opposition. Imam alayhi salam responds by saying that, well, this invitation towards Aman and Bir and Sila, may God reward you for it, but I believe the true Aman and immunity is from God and God alone. Khayrul Aman Amanullah. You can't give me immunity. You have no power. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. تُعْتِ الْمُلْكَ مَنْ تَشَاءُ وَتَنْزِعُ الْمُلْكَ مِمَّنْ تَشَاءُ وَتُعِزُّ مَنْ تَشَاءُ وَتُذِلُّ مَنْ تَشَاءُ. Power belongs to him and him alone. You can't give me immunity. Oh, what are you trying to give me? You're trying to give me security. You know what I seek? I seek fear. You want to give me security. I'm looking for fear.
Because إِنَّهُ يُؤْمِنُ اللَّهَ الَّذِي يَخَافُهُ فِي الدُّنْيَا.
God is the one who gives immunity. And God grants immunity only to those who fear Him in the dunya. I fear God, not you. Next slide, please. And of course he tells Abdullah bin Ja'far that, listen, I have had a vision from the Prophet and my instructions are very clear. I have to make an uprising. وَأَنَا لَهُ مَاظٍ كَانَ لِي أَوْ عَلَيَّ. And come what may, whether I die or I live, this movement has to go ahead. He assures Abdullah bin Ja'far. Next slide, please. Next, please. In Karbala, Abdullah bin Ja'far, therefore, is represented by his two sons. On one occasion, after the event of Karbala, somebody condemns, he says, you see the loss that you suffered, you lost your two sons there. And Abdullah bin Ja'far replies that, woe be to you! If I could, I would have gone there myself. Abdullah was proud and voluntarily sent his two sons. And look at how the sons represented the father and obviously the mother. We don't have much details of what happened, but definitely when the time came on Ashura when everybody was dying, and when the Bani Hashim one by one in different family levels were giving up their lives, the time came for the sons of Muslim bin Aqil to do so. So the sons of Ja'far bin Abi Talib to give up their lives. So now the children of Abdullah bin Ja'far must have come forward. Imam Hussein must have given them the freedom that you remain behind to protect your mother. And perhaps they would have said that, no, if everyone is giving up their lives to establish the truth, give us also that opportunity to do so. I say this because their battle cry in the battlefield shows that. Look at what the owl says when he goes to the battlefield. إِن تُنْكِرُونِي فَأَنَا ابْنُ جَعْفَرْ شَهِيدُ صِدْقٍ فِي الْجِنَانِ أَزْهَرْ يَطِيرُ فِيهَا بِجَنَاحٍ أَخْضَرْ وَكَفَى بِهَذَا شَرَفًا يَوْمَ الْمَحْشَرْ. If you don't know who I am, I'm proud to be the son of Ja'far, who was killed in the Battle of Muta. Ja'far, who is the Shaheed. Ja'far, who flies. Flying is a symbolic way of saying he's been given the power to move in paradise in those worlds of perfection. Next slide, please. Muhammad bin Abdullah bin Ja'far. Here we are standing in front of the enemy and we are confronted with evil. Either you submit or you die. Well, we will fight back. But let us tell you, look at the battle cry. نَشْكُوا إِلَى اللَّهِ مِنَ الْعُدْوَانِ. Our complaint is to God and God alone, not to you. We're going to fight you. نَشْكُوا إِلَى اللَّهِ مِنَ الْعُدْوَانِ فِعَالَ قَوْمٍ فِي الرِّدَى عُمْيَانِ. These people are blind. They haven't seen the truth. That's why they're opposing it. قَدْ تَرَكُوا مَعَالِمَ الْقُرْآنِ وَأَظْهَرُوا الْكُفْرَ مَعَ الطُّغْيَانِ. In their blindness, in their deafness, now they've abandoned the Qur'an. And now they've followed their desires and are transgressing against the laws of God. We salute and we praise the conviction and the courage and the sacrifice of these great soldiers, Aun and Muhammad. As-salamu alayk ya Aba Abdullah wa ala al-arwah al-lati hallat bifina'ik wa anakhat birahmik. عليكم منا جميعا سلام الله أبدا ما بقينا وبقي الليل والنهار.